Welcome to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.
Welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field, downtown Cleveland. Indians taking on the Orioles in a weekend series and the start of a homestand that will also feature Seattle next week. Coming up on this week's show, as always, we take a look at the week gone by. We will hear from Indians Director of Player Development Carter Hawkins, the weekly farm report. Also get a draft preview from the Indians Director of Amateur Scouting Brad Grant. Hear from Brandon Moss, as well as Jason Kipnis and Nick Hagedon, all key players in what was a very strong road trip just completed for the Tribe. That's all coming your way shortly as we get rolling with Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to be back home for the Indians as they opened up a new homestand on Friday night. Tough loss for the Tribe, 5-2 at the hands of the Baltimore Orioles. But as we take a look at our week in review and take us back to Sunday in Seattle, quite a finish to a road swing for the Tribe as they would finish 5-2 on their seven-game road trip, keyed by a series win in Seattle. They had already won two of the first three heading into Sunday's series finale, and in a game where the Indians trailed into the sixth inning by a score of 3-0. They got some offensive contributions and a spark from Ryan Rayburn.
Now the lefty's payoff. Swung on, hit a ton to right. This is deep into the right field corner, and this ball is gone. Ryan Rayburn goes Apple for his third home run of the year. And mentioned it at the outset, the ball carries much better here in the daylight than it does during night games. The Indians now trail in this ball game by a score of 3-1.
Later on in that sixth inning, Michael Bourne came through.
Bourne swings and lines a base hit to left center. Moss scores. Gomes moves up to third. Moving up to second is Avilas, and it's a one-run game. Michael Bourne lashes an RBI single to left center, his 14th RBI of the year, and the Indians still have the bases loaded, still nobody out, and the Tribe down a run.
The Indians would tie the ball game, forcing extra innings. It remained tied at 3 heading to the 12th, and on a day where the Indians were really scrambling to come up with the big base hit, Michael Brantley would put the Indians in front in unlikely fashion.
Bases loaded, 2 down, and the 12th game tied at 3. The 3-0 pitch to Brantley. Way outside, ball 4, the Indians take the lead. A bases loaded walk, and Michael Brantley picks up his 30th RBI, tops on the club, and the Indians lead it for the first time today, 4-3 here in the 12th.
Then it was David Murphy supplying some insurance in that 12th inning.
The pitch, swing and a line shot to right field, base hit David Murphy. Ramirez scores. Here comes Kipnis. On his way to third is Brantley. And David Murphy comes through with a two-run single to right. It's a three-run 12th. And the Indians have a 6-3 lead. And what a day for Murphy. A day that didn't start until the seventh inning.
Austin Adams would make that 6-3 lead hold up as he picked up his first major league save. And after the game, Murphy stopped by to talk not only about his big hit in the 12th, but also a fine defensive play that may have saved the game for the Indians.
Congratulations, and did you keep that ball from getting out of the park there in the 10th inning, did you think?
No, I don't think I did. I think my train of thought was I didn't want them to have their 3-4-5 coming up the next inning, so I wanted Cano to go ahead and hit and get out.
Woo-hoo!
And so that Cruz could lead off.
Would that ball have gotten out of the park, do you think, David?
No.
Had you not?
No, I'm kidding. No, it wouldn't have. I think off the bat I thought it was going to. And then as I got closer, I went up to kind of jump like it was going out of the park. And I don't know if it died a little bit or if I just estimated that it was going a little bit farther, but I kind of handcuffed myself and dropped. So fortunately, Cody was able to get out of it.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you there initially, so I didn't catch the sarcastic humor there.
No, that's okay.
And then, David, you get the big hit in the bottom half of the 12th with the pitcher really struggling with control. And when you see that, how much does that change your approach at the plate?
Obviously, he just threw four straight to Brantley, and that wasn't the only instance in the inning where he didn't look like, his command was a little bit off. And, he's a younger guy, I believe. He just came up the other day. So there can be some nerves up there, and, he was able to get ahead of me with strike one, but he left one in the middle for the second pitch.
David, it is not easy to be a pinch hitter, but my goodness, you've now had six pinch hits, two pinch hit home runs. You're having a terrific season. How have you been able to not necessarily play every day or even sit for a while and still stay this sharp? It can't be that easy.
I think I'm trying to use it to my advantage. I've had a lot of points in my career where I've played pretty much every day, and I enjoy it, and it can get you in a rhythm, but it can also be tough, and it can also wear on your body. So I'm trying to make the most of, if there's a lefty on the mound and I'm not playing, to take care of my body the right way so that when I do have that opportunity to pinch hit, that I feel fresh and I'm ready to go. And especially most of the time when you're pinch hitting, like last night, it was a great opportunity. I'm coming up with two guys on base. One out, so there's a lot of options to get the job done right there. So, it can be tough, and I think I didn't really do well at it early in my career, but I've gotten to the point where I really enjoy it.
And, David, a lengthy stretch of play for the Indians comes to an end tomorrow with a well-deserved off day. Days like this, I imagine, heading into an off day are especially satisfying when you come out on top.
Definitely. It's always fun to win the last game of a series when you're flying out, so you can have a happy flight. And obviously going into an off day, guys feel good about themselves, so that hopefully we can carry this momentum into Kansas City.
Hey, great job again today, David. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
After an off day Monday in Kansas City, the Tribe opened up a series with the Royals on Tuesday night. You figured good pitching would rule that series, and it certainly did in the opener. A well-pitched, tightly contested game went to the fourth with the Tribe trailing until Brandon Moss changed that. Here's Guthrie's 3-2 pitch. Swung on, and that's hammered to right. This one's deep, and it is a home run into the bullpen for Brandon Moss. This game is tied at one. The 11th pitch of the at-bat. And Moss turned it into a home run. Now, Brandon Moss with home run number 9 on the season. The first hit allowed by Guthrie. And the Indians have tied this ball game. Then with the game still tied at 1 in the 8th, it was Michael Brantley who came through again.
Now the 1-2 delivery. A swing and a line drive, base hit to center. That'll score Kipnis with a go-ahead run. How about that at bat for Michael Brantley? A two-out line drive, single to center, and Kipnis scores with ease from second base, and the Indians take advantage of the inning-ending double play that wasn't turned. And Cleveland has the lead 2-1, and Davis gives up his first run in 2015, and he got beat on a slider. So give Brantley his 31st RBI.
And in the 9th, Cody Allen finished up an outstanding pitching performance by locking down the save.
Royals down to their last hope. It's Alex Rios. 2 down, 9th inning, 2-1 Indians. The wind in the pitch. Rios bounces it weakly to third. Charged by Chisenhall. Gloves, sets, throws. Ball game. How about this Indians performance tonight? Between Carlos Carrasco and the Indians' bullpen, the Tribe pitchers retired the last 17 in order.
After the game, Moss stopped by to talk about what for him was a milestone home run, his 100th career home run.
Congratulations, Brandon. Career home run number 100. What does that mean for you?
It means a lot, actually. I always said when I got back to the big leagues after struggling for so long that, you know, it'd be really cool to if you could finish your career and have 100 homers, just because everything had been so tough for me before, you know, when I was up the first time. So, you know, to reach that mark and this is a hard game and it means something to me to reach that.
Brandon, for people who are not familiar with your story, how close were you to just saying, you know what, that's enough, I've tried it long enough?
I was a year away. I was trying to go to Japan in AAA in 2012. I was trying to get a job in Japan, and if I didn't get one, I was pretty much going to call it a career, because, you know, it's just one of those things that you get labeled something early on, and in this game it's very hard to break those labels.
Yeah, but you had a big supporter too, right? Wasn't your wife telling you to hang in there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, she knew how much I loved the game, and she didn't want me to walk away for the wrong reasons, but at the same time, she knew that I understood that we had a family, and that you can't follow something so long that it costs your family money and time just to do, you know, and that's where it was getting to, and luckily it worked out.
I know you found a good spot in Oakland, and it seems like things have worked out very well for you here with the Indians.
I love this team. I love the guys on this team. You know, it started off rough for us record-wise and even statistically-wise. You have your ups and your downs, and we've definitely been working hard to turn this thing around, and lately, you know, we've been playing some good baseball.
Great job, Brandon. I'm so glad you're not eating sushi tonight in Tokyo. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So the Indians had a 2-1 win in the series opener. The Royals came back and won the second game 4-2 on a night where Corey Kluber pitched a complete game, 8 innings worth of complete game baseball, but Kansas City had just enough, and the Indians' offense labored on Wednesday night. But Thursday night, the Tribe would bounce back with a 6-2 win to take the series, and they got it going in the third inning thanks to the American League Player of the Month for the month of May, Jason Kipnis.
Top of the order, Jason Kipnis, ground ball towards second, in the hole, into right, base hit. That'll score Bourne with ease. Jason Kipnis with an RBI single to right. He's knocked in 26, and the Indians, good situational hitting, have taken a 1-0 lead off Chris Young here in inning number 3.
Also in the third, Michael Brantley came through again.
Now the wind and the 1-0. Brantley with a line shot toward right. It gets down, a base hit. Kipnis scores. Santana will be stopped at third. And Michael Brantley delivers an RBI single to right. Third straight hit for the Tribe. 2-0 Cleveland. And the Indians still have runners at the corners. And still only one out. And out of that first base dugout comes the pitching coach, Dave Ihlen.
And more familiar names offensively, David Murphy chipping in that 4-run third inning.
Murphy awaiting the 2-2 pitch, and here it comes. Swung on, belted to center. Kane racing back. This ball is over his head. It'll bang up against the wall. Scoring is Santana. Brantley around third. He will score. Stopping at second with a 2-run double is David Murphy. And the Indians finally get that critical 2-out RBI blow. David Murphy blasting a 2-out, 2-run double over the head of center fielder Lorenzo Cain. That's newsworthy in itself. Somebody got a ball beyond Cain. 4-0 Indians. Murphy, 6 doubles, 16 RBIs. Boy, what a season he is having in a part-time role.
Then in the fifth, Brandon Moss would give the Indians enough runs to, in a sense, put the game away. Here's the 0-2 pitch. Swung on and hammered this one high in the air to deep right. Home run, Brandon Moss. 101 in his career and number 10 on the season, a 2-run shot to right center. And the Indians take a 6-2 lead. And the Tribe went on to a 6-2 rain-shortened win to wrap up the series win and a solid road trip. They came home 5-2 on the road swing and within a game of the 500 mark. So there was a loss on Friday night to Baltimore, 5-2, but the Indians against the Orioles through the weekend, and then after an off day Monday, Seattle comes in for a three-game series starting on Tuesday night. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll visit with Carter Hawkins, the Indians' Director of Player Development, the Weekly Farm Report, coming your way shortly on the Indians Radio Network. Tribe Talk continuing here from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Great to have you with us. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend. And each week we visit with Carter Hawkins, who's the Indians' Director of Player Development. And this week, Carter will fill us in on the Lake County Ball Club. Lots of good things going on offensively and on the mound at the low single-A level, the first full season team in the Indians' farm system. But before we talk Lake County, we had a chance to ask him about the player development staff's role in the upcoming draft, which starts on Monday, and Carter Hawkins says it's a great time, really, for everyone in the front office.
Yeah, Rosie, it's a fun week or a couple of weeks. I mean, really, you know, our scouts are preparing for 1 or 2 days for an entire year, so it's, you know, very much their Super Bowl, and you know, it's kind of all hands on deck for all the guys in the office, and you know, certainly everyone's focused on this for, you know, really the next 2 weeks. But you know, from a player development standpoint, you know, we haven't seeing the players that have been scouted for the entire year like the guys in our scouting department are. So, you know, for us to be able to go in and see a video and be able to say, hey, you know, this is the guy that, you know, we really need, you know, that certainly would be fairly short-sighted. But what we can do is offer some perspective on adjustments we've made with some of our players and, you know, kind of the direction that we're heading in this department, just to give some guys some perspective. And hopefully that helps our scouts as they make the decisions. And we just can't wait to get, you know, the 30, 35 guys will be coming into our system here later in June.
And I know weaved in and out of that, you still continue to keep tabs on teams in the system as we get closer to mid-season for the full-season teams. And we'll take a look at Lake County this week, the Indians single-A club in the Midwest League. The Indians minor league player of the month this week was playing at Lake County, and it's Claudio Bautista, infielder, who has posted some real nice numbers, hitting over 300 with some power. And what are you seeing from him? Still very much a young player, but adjusting to a full-season league nicely?
Absolutely. You know, Claudio got a taste of Lake County 2 years ago, actually, and then played a full season there last year. And, you know, the talent was always very clear. You know, he has the ability to drive the baseball. He has a lot of athleticism. But just his ability to control his zone, his ability to swing at pitches that he can drive, it was something that he's been focused on, and this year it started to click a little bit, and you know, certainly this last month clicked a lot bit. You know, he's been really driving the ball, and you know, has been a very productive member of that team, and you know, it really is indicative of the work that he's put in. You know, Larry Day, our hitting coach down there, has been very focused with him on making sure that he's prepared each and every day, and the results have certainly followed.
And you mentioned him having some time there in the past, and when a young player is asked to repeat a lower level in the minor leagues, do you have to do some selling for that player to really make sure he's in the right frame of mind when he does go back to that level?
At times, you know, it's a kind of a player-to-player thing. You know, Claudio was so young when he had his experience at that level that, you know, I feel like he probably understood that he needed to go back. You know, at times we do have a blockade of sorts or traffic jams where, you know, players that might deserve to be at a level, you know, higher aren't able to go there at a specific time. But, you know, for those players, it's really just making sure that they understand that, you know, be in the present, you know, be in the moment, make wherever you are your big leagues. And if you can do that, you know, that player is going to force our hand to make decisions to give them better opportunities.
Staying on the position player front, Bobby Bradley had that MVP Triple Crown season in the Arizona Summer League a year ago. And this year looks like solid numbers, not off the charts, but what have you liked about him in his first full minor league season?
I think two things. One, he had an oblique injury that put him a little bit behind the eight ball. Just the way he's been able to respond from that has been really encouraging. You know, just really stayed focused throughout that rehab process. Really hit the ground running when he got back. And you know, he's very much been driving the ball as well. The power's certainly there. And he's just working on the consistency of his at-bats. You know, Larry Day with Bobby as well has been extremely impressive and just getting his routine in his first full season. You know, he's playing every day for the first time in his life. You know, the Arizona Summer League, you're only playing 4 out of 5 days. So, you know, just getting into that routine and then getting into that, you know, consistent mindset to where he's looking to compete every single day has been a great adjustment for him, and Bobby definitely, for how young he is, has handled it extremely well.
Yu Chen Chang, the shortstop, who actually we saw a little bit in spring training in some major league games, his level right now is at Lake County, and what are you seeing from him so far?
Yeah, Chang is that guy that, you know, every time I talk to a scout from another team or they come up to me during the game, it's, you know, who's that shortstop you guys got in Lake County? And he's just a guy that, you know, you walk into the ballpark and you see him take ground balls and you see him take swings during BP, and, you know, he definitely stands out, just the way he goes about his business, his confidence, the way he carries himself, and just the fundamental, you know, aspects of his game that stick out so much. So, you know, definitely somebody that is being identified throughout the league, but, you know, his ability to adjust to that league, the first full season for him as well, the first time being in the States away from our translator, you know, still learning the English language, still learning the American culture. You know, it's a big adjustment for, you know, for a person, much less, you know, someone trying to perform physically every day, and he's done an outstanding job of that. You know, continues to get better every single day, understands, you know, what his focus is going forward, and he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on, and they can move very quickly here in the near future.
And that sometimes we focus so much on the offensive numbers. Defensively, a number that you see is 15 errors, but I think baseball in general is littered with guys who went on to become superstars in the major leagues who had some higher error numbers in the minor leagues. And what are some of the challenges that a young player goes through that might contribute to higher error numbers when they're at a very low level?
There's a bunch. I mean, I think, you know, for one, especially in that Midwest League early in April, one of the challenges is you're standing there for eight innings in 33-degree weather, and then a ball goes to your left, and, you know, you haven't moved, and you're a little bit frozen. And that certainly is an adjustment for a lot of our guys, you know, that league, you know, playing up in, you know, Michigan in the month of April. But, you know, also, obviously, error numbers means you're getting to a lot of balls. You know, if you have a greater range and you're able to get the balls in the hole or balls up the middle, you know, you have an opportunity to make errors that maybe some players don't. You know, Chang has certainly worked on that, worked on his range, and, you know, getting to some more balls and making some more above-average plays. And, you know, with that comes some mistakes. But, you know, at a young level, we would encourage our guys to push their limits and try to figure out, you know, how far they can go. And with that, some errors will happen, but, you know, that's definitely not something we're focused on.
Carter Hawkins joining us, Indians Director of Player Development. We're talking Lake County, and let's switch to the mound where a recent top-round draft pick, Justice Sheffield, is rolling right along. He's made 10 starts now, and it looks like the numbers are pretty impressive across the board. And what do you like so far about him at a very young age at a pretty good level?
Yeah, Justice, you know, came in a big-time draft prospect out of Tennessee. Was a Vanderbilt commit, actually, so my college coach wasn't too happy that we ended up signing him, but regardless, we were ecstatic to get him into the system, to have a power arm left-hander, you know, that can start, that has a good delivery, that has a field of pitch as well. You know, those guys just aren't growing on trees, but, you know, Justice, being a 19-year-old in the Midwest League, his ability to miss bats, to get deep into ball games, you know, has been very impressive, and, you know, we feel like he's that type of pitcher that, you know, you can definitely see him moving quickly and continues to get better every outing, understand, you know, how to use his arsenal, and, you know, he just keeps on getting better day in and day out.
And you have another starter down there who's off to a nice start this season in Sean Brady, and what are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I mean, whereas Justice is more of your power profile left-hander, Sean is the more control command type. Not to say that he's not going to continue to add velocity, not to say that that's not going to be part of his game, but, you know, Sean is good at throwing his breaking ball for strikes, throwing his changeup for strikes, getting guys off balance, locating balls in and out, and, you know, he's done a really good job of using his stuff to force weak contact and miss bats at times as well. But, you know, really has helped stabilize that rotation along with Justice, and, you know, feel like he's another left-hander that we're really excited about keeping in our starting rotation for a long time.
And we'll finish it up in the bullpen for a pitcher who's no longer at Lake County. He did so well that he's moving on up. And we're talking about J.P. Feiereisen. And I know you talked about him in the past, just some ridiculous numbers for him. And how has he done it to move so quickly?
It's been pretty impressive. I mean, we have had some of those relievers like a Cody Allen or a Kyle Crockett that have just skyrocketed through our system, you know, not giving up many runs. J.P. certainly, you know, cut from the same cloth. Did not give up any runs last year in Mahoning Valley, you know, and took a long, long time to give up any up in Lake County this year. You know, he's a guy that doesn't have, you know, Craig Kimbrell's type stuff. He's not throwing 99, but, He is throwing 93, 94, locating his fastball and locating his slider. Has a lot of deception, misses a lot of bats. Most importantly, you know, whatever the situation, whether it's a high-leverage situation late in the game or seventh-inning situation where they're up by a lot, you know, he's coming in and he's focused and he knows what he's trying to do. And, you know, when you combine that mindset with that type of stuff, it's definitely end up with a very good back-end reliever, and, you know, we're really looking forward to seeing where he can go.
Well, Carter, we appreciate the update on Lake County. Best of luck with the draft next Monday, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
Thanks, Rosie. I appreciate it.
That's Carter Hawkins, the Indians Director of Player Development, talking about the Lake County Captains, the Indians single-A ball club in the Midwest League. Lots of good things going on there. And the Indians hoping to add some more fine prospects into their minor league system starting Monday night. The first round of the draft begins on Monday, and Brad Grant is the Indians' Director of Amateur Scouting. We'll hear from him, get a draft preview after this timeout on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus with you this weekend, and it's great to have you with us as we talk Tribe here as the Indians are home at Progressive Field for the week before heading back out again next Friday. They'll head out on the road to take on the Tigers over in the Motor City. Some important days, though, this week for the Indians organization as they look to restock their farm system with top-quality talent. It happens every year at draft time, and the amateur draft begins on Monday with the first round. Brad Grant is the Indians' Director of Amateur Scouting. And last year, a year where the Indians had five picks within the first 100. And if you look back on that, some good things happening for Bradley Zimmer, Justice Sheffield, Bobby Bradley, some good young talent picked high in that draft last year by the Indians. And that's where we started with Brad, talking about last year's draft, how important it was, and now what lies ahead this season in the draft for the Tribe.
Yeah, Rosie, it's been great to watch Bradley Zimmer and see what he's gone out and done at A-ball, and the way he's hit and hit for power and played a really good center field for us is exciting to watch. Jordan Sheffield, the high school pitcher we took from Tennessee, has gone out in low A and pitched extremely well. And then Bobby Bradley, another high school player that we took, is in low A for us as well and performing extremely well, hitting, walking, and hitting for power. So getting on base a lot right now.
And your first pick this year, number 17. But I know you like having multiple picks in the first 100. And how is it shaking out this year, and how pleased are you with what you'll be able to do?
Yeah, we'd much rather have multiple picks than there's just one or two picks. It gives you a lot of flexibility, and then with our bonus pool, it gives you a lot more money to work with. But to be able to add four players in the first 100 picks is a really exciting thing to have the opportunity to do.
And you mentioned bonus pool. How much money does the team have to spend? And since that was implemented, a big advantage to getting things done in an expedient fashion?
Yeah, the players want to sign now. They know what the bonus pool is. So this year we have $7.2 million to spend on the draft. We can use that money any way we want. We just have to stay within that limit. So it gives you flexibility, gives you creativity within the draft to be able to add a bunch of different players and a bunch of talent in different ways.
All right, I know you can't comment on specific players. Obviously, you're not going to know until the team's ahead of you pick. But when you look at this year's draft, high school, college, anyone favor the other as opposed to quality and depth of talent?
Yeah, it's a good question. When we go into it, picking 17 this year, it's different. It's difficult to assess exactly who's going to be there. The draft this year has talent all through it, so there's no true majority of college pitchers or majority of high school pitchers. It's talented throughout. There's good depth through it, so you just react to what's available at your spot. And it's kind of cliche to say, but you want to take the best player, and then you want to take the player who fits best for the Cleveland Indians. So we're not targeting a pitcher or targeting a hitter. We're targeting the player that gets there at 17.
And certainly as you go about it, narrow things down as you travel all over this country to identify different players. How much time have you and your scouts been putting in terms of mileage and just seeing different players and the background checks, all of that? How much of that comes into play?
Yeah, we start a year. So as soon as the draft was done last year, we started right back up in July and started seeing the high school players and the college players play in summer leagues. And then it continues all the way through. And our scouts have done an unbelievable job this year, given the weather issues we've had here in Ohio has been all through the country. So we had to scramble a lot, but the number of looks we have at players, the amount of information we've been able to acquire on players, where we are right now to make decisions is a really good spot, and that's a tribute to our scouts.
All right, Brad. Well, I know a busy time for you for sure, but thanks so much for coming by. Appreciate it.
No problem, Rosie. Thank you.
That's Brad Grant, the Indians' director of amateur scouting, previewing the draft, which starts on Monday. Stay with us when we come back. Jason Kipnis will join us, so will Nick Hagedon. They both had good weeks and a big part of the Indians' road swing just completed. We'll hear from them next on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk, our final segment on this week's show, and glad you could join us this weekend as the Indians are back home here at Progressive Field. Real nice crowd on Friday night, and the expectation for the same on Saturday afternoon for the ballgame against Baltimore on Corey Kluber Bobblehead Day, the Cy Young edition, and that's a great piece. I had a chance to see that earlier this week, and hopefully you had a chance, if you're hearing this afterward, to come out and pick one up, or if you're hearing this beforehand, to stop down and be a part of the action here at Progressive Field today and pick up a Corey Kluber bobblehead. Well, a big month last month, the month of May, for Jason Kipnis, deservedly so, voted American League Player of the Month for the month of May. He hit safely in 25 of the 29 games he played in the month, a .429 average. Along the way, 15 doubles, 3 triples, 4 home runs, 17 runs driven in. He scored 30 runs, and his on-base percentage was .511. Think of that. For a whole month, in a game where failure is the norm, Jason Kipnis reached base more than he did not reach base for the Indians. You think that can help get an offense going? Well, he became just the third player in Major League history with 50 hits or more and 30 or more runs in the month of May. The only two others, Ty Cobb for the Tigers back in 1921 and Al Simmons for Philadelphia in 1925. We joined Jason Kipnis earlier this week, actually before he was named Player of the Month. It just seemed like a certainty for him. And we did talk to him, though, about the big month of May and what it meant to him to get on that kind of roll for an entire month. The toughest question to answer, do you try not and think about when you're going as well as you've been going, why you are and that type of thing?
The only reason you'd think about why is just so you can find an answer and keep it going to have that with you. But no, I've just been good with my daily routine of not changing much, coming to the field with an idea of what I want to get done each day, and with the swing and an approach, I've tried to keep it as consistent as I can. I think that's led to the success.
And it's an uncommonly long hot stretch, and when that happens, do you sometimes surprise yourself? He's almost nightly coming off with at least a base hit or two?
A little bit. You never want to be surprised by it, but I'm very happy with it and content with each game, knowing even the ones that I got out, I'll have some good at-bats. And I think as long as I'm happy with how I approach the bat, the pitches I swing at, you can't always control the results, but as long as you're happy with the type of at-bats you're having, then I think I'm all right with that.
And you look at where you are in the lineup, and I know you mentioned a lot that you felt you were coming along anyway before you were moved into that leadoff spot. What is it about that spot, though, in the lineup that you enjoy when you're put there by Terry Francona?
Setting the tone. I think you can kind of dictate how your team comes out and plays just by the first at-bat. If you have a long at-bat or end it with a hit or swing on the first pitch, you're letting the other team know that you're ready to go from the first pitch on in the game, that you're not. It's not going to take you any time to get situated, and that you're telling them, hey, we're here to play and let's get this going.
And you're in that spot, you're rolling along in the month of May, and by the end of the month, you have more than 50 hits, you have 30 runs scored, and you start hearing names like Derek Jeter was the last to do it in the American League. You throw extra base hits in that mix, and Joe DiMaggio's name comes up. You ever look at that and start wondering, man, this is something else?
It was pretty cool because it gets you a little perspective on those guys, especially the ones that they've done in consecutive months or more than once, and it tells you how good they were. But, I mean, it was a great month. It was a lot of fun. The team was winning games, so it was enjoyable for everyone, and it's very cool to be in the same sentence as a bunch of those guys. And, I mean, it makes you smile, but you don't think about it too much, and you just keep going from there.
That's Jason Kipnis, Indian second baseman, the American League's Player of the Month for the month of May. Second time in his career that he has won a Player of the Month award. You may recall he did it back in June of 2013, that year that he made the All-Star team. Now, a big reason why the Indians have played better baseball, the work of their bullpen, and on that last road trip, the Indians' bullpen allowed just one earned run in 16 innings of work. And if you go back to May the 1st, since that time, the Indians' ERA out of the pen, 2.26, third lowest in the major leagues, behind only the Mets, and the Tigers, surprisingly, as they've taken some heat for the status of their pen, but it's been very effective as well. A lot of keys out of that pen, but one of them, certainly the progress and development of left-hander Nick Hagedon, always with a great arm, hard thrower, but he has really come into his own this season and has gone through a real nice stretch and given Terry Francona some reliability from that left side out of the bullpen. And we talked to Nick Hagedon about how things have gone and what he credits his resurgence to on the mound.
I think the biggest thing for bullpen guys especially is keeping your confidence and keeping the faith that in your stuff and knowing that you can get the job done and not kind of riding that roller coaster of getting too high when it's good and too low when it's bad.
And you were tested after a real good spring,
yeah.
And you had some difficult outings, but not too many. And is that a real sign of that development at the major league level for you?
I think it is because, you know, it's really easy when you have a few bad outings in a row to get down on yourself. And I think just the ability to stay positive and trust yourself and still stay confident is huge because you're not going to go through a season or a career without a rough patch.
And it seemed like Terry Francona kept going back to you in some key spots, and now you're working at the end of games like last night, a hitter there at the end of the game. And how important is that to you to know that that's there?
That's very important, I think, to know that you have the confidence of your manager and that he trusts you to pitch in those situations is huge. And I think it just allows you to trust yourself even more and know that you're going to get the job done most of the time.
Part of your role at times can be just facing one hitter, which on the outside may sound simple. It's just one hitter.
Yeah.
But what are the challenges there to coming in and being effective to just that one hitter?
Yeah, well, for one, you know that most of the time when it's that situation that you're only going to have that one guy, so your night's either going to be really, really good or it's going to seem really, really bad. So I think the challenge in that is to kind of block that out and really just focus on making your pitches, because it's usually, if you're coming in to face, you know, one tough lefty, it's usually a pretty good hitter. It's not, you know, it's a guy that you're going to have to make your pitches to and that you're not going to be able to get away with a lot of mistakes to.
That's Nick Hagedon with some good stories about his days at the University of Washington and pitching with Tim Lincecum, who has gone on to become one of the best in the game for a long time pitching for the San Francisco Giants. Well, that's going to do it for our show this week. Glad you could join us as always. And we'll join you next week from Detroit when the Indians are on their next road swing with a 3-game series against the Tigers in the Motor City next weekend. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.
We've got a future. We're headed to the top. We're on the warpath. It's spreading far and wide. We're talking baseball. Talking Tribe. You're talking baseball. Talking Tribe.
You've been listening to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat.